tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday the 22nd of May 2026 and you're listening to me, Sir Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Yes, it's that day of the week once again when we have a special guest here, and that special guest is Grandpa Dan all the way from Texas. Grandpa, good day, sir. How you doing?
Oh, we're doing all right down here, Sven. Farming for views, farming for likes, and it looks like we've got farming for a story for today's Friday. I don't know how well that that segued into getting into the story, but I did my best on short notice.
Well, I think that was exceptionally well done, actually. Yes, we're going to be talking about farming today as something which is dear to the heart of most Texans, I believe. It's quite dear to my heart as well, actually, being a rural sort of person. I'm very concerned about how the farming industry is in Britain and also how it is in America. So we'll be taking a little look at the wider industry, and we'll also be zeroing in on a particular news story. Now, this comes from Breitbart, and the headline is USDA settles lawsuit, scraps race-based discrimination in farming programs. And this is really good because the discrimination has been against white people. Effectively, white people were not able to get all of these grants and loan relief and all sorts of funding, and they weren't able to get it because they were white. And the idea behind this was that that they were somehow going to make up for past discrimination against black people by effectively discriminating against white people. There shouldn't be any discrimination at all. So this is very good that they've actually won this, but there isn't any compensation actually going to the farmers, which I'm quite surprised at, because if you're going to admit that a group has been discriminated against in society, in court, surely they should be entitled to some form of compensation. There is some money going out, but that's only going to the lawyers. So let's have a look and see what it says here. The United States Department of Agriculture, USDA, secured a settlement that ended race and sex-based farming programs, Breitbart News has learned exclusively. The Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, that's WILL, WILL, worked to secure a settlement with the USDA that would end what they believe are discriminatory programs across three federal programs. As part of the program, the USDA will pay Will's attorney fees. Dan Lennington, Will Managing Vice President and Deputy Counsel, said in a written statement, the Trump administration inherited dozens of discriminatory programs that supported certain farmers over others based on race and sex. Those shameful days are now behind us. We appreciate the USDA's hard work in reforming important programs for American farmers. Now, it's quite interesting there that there was also sexual discrimination. I mean, you don't often think of female farmers. I particularly would think of female farmers in America, where the farms are huge, they're massive. I doubt whether you get very many women involved. I mean, you do get farmers' wives in Britain, but it is mainly a male pastime. Grandpa, what are your thoughts on this and on the wider farming industry over there?
Well, this is this story is what I refer to, what I jotted down here. It's an example of the government tossing a few scraps towards the people to look like they're really, you know, hey, we're doing something. We're doing something positive. Farming has always been like one of the most difficult and difficult applications. It's actually one of the most, I think it's like the number two most dangerous jobs in America. It is a dangerous job. It's a difficult job. It always has been. You know, I've always joked that, you know, you think about the frontier days and you look at the farmers back in the old West, you know, when they're out there in the middle of nowhere, hoping Indians don't attack them, you know, with this little, you know, just scratching in the dirt, trying to grow a row of corn. And I've always looked at that and I thought, you know, if my choice was do that or rob the railroad, I'm riding with Jesse James. I'm just not living like that. That's just a horror. I don't know how those guys would do it. And of course, you know, you fast forward to today and you have modern technology and tractors and this and that. And it's very, but it's the same problem. It's very difficult to make a living. The equipment's very expensive. Land is taxed to the point it's very difficult. You're talking about the size of the farms, and it varies. A lot of farmers, what a lot of people don't understand is, you know, they see farming operations in America. Most of that, the farmers do not own that land. They lease the land. So they'll have a lease for a couple of years or whatever, and they're leasing someone else's land to do farming on. So they're paying to lease the land. Tractors are ridiculously expensive. You know, it's talking about large tractors for an actual farming operation. You know, there's a lot that goes into it. It's always been a difficult way to make a living. And then at the end of the day, you're at the mercy of the markets. You know, what are they going to pay you for what you grow when you take it and haul your grain or whatever, for instance, to sell it? You know, are you going to come out? Because there's so much that goes into the input side of it. And we'll get into that as we go. I'll circle back to that. But we always have to remember things in the context of everything, the economy, the entire economy in the U.S. is some form of various money scams. There is very little actual production. And the few people that are producing, in this case, farmers, you know, they're the target of getting, you know, sucking this off. These programs, and we were talking about this, man, you and I were talking about this before we started recording. You know, it's not like all farmers just across the board, you'll get on these programs. You have to apply for them. There's various different ones. You have to apply for them. And what happens most of the time is if a farmer does apply for them, you know, it's like, oh, if you're having, you know, you're affected by this weather phenomenon right now, you could qualify for this program. Okay, sounds good. Farmer goes down to the USDA office and says, okay, I want to apply for this program. And okay, here's the book. You know, it's like a Google's terms of service, you know, here's everything you've got to do to apply for this program. Now, the money is allotted. Millions and millions of dollars are allotted to these programs. But like everything else, no one really knows where the money goes. Because when the farmers, a lot of times they look at, you know, this 1-inch thick terms that they've got to do to actually qualify for the program, a lot of them just shrug it off and go on, or they try to apply and then they get turned down, and in the end nobody knows where the money goes, circulates around and goes in people's pockets. But this is, like I say, this story in and of itself, as you've already pointed out, they had this big lawsuit, and the only people who are getting paid are not the farmers, it's the lawyers. So that there's a nice synopsis right off the bat for how this entire economy works.
Well, I just got a question there. You were saying that the farmers lease the land. Who is it that they lease the land from? Who is it that the farmers lease the land from?
The landowners. I mean, you'll have people that own land. Sometimes it's individuals, sometimes it's families. Sometimes there is a trust, you know, like you have a wealthy family and it's put into a trust for tax purposes, and they will lease it from the trust, and they pay however much an acre to lease this land. Now, you think, well, why doesn't the landowners, why don't they farm it themselves? Because it's not profitable. That's why they're not doing it themselves. They would rather get the guaranteed check from the lease than gamble on, oh, I'll farm this myself, and when I sell the weed or whatever I'm growing, I will make a profit on it. They just take the lease money as a guaranteed check. So, yeah, I mean, it's just whoever the landowner is. It's usually private individuals or families, or sometimes, like I say, it'll be in some sort of trust that manages, you know, the land for tax purposes. So, but yeah, that's what they do. And again, the landowners aren't farming it because it's too much of a gamble.
Well, I mean, these landowners, surely they must have been farmers once, and then they've made enough money somewhere else or whatever, so then they rented out. I mean, would that be correct? Were they farmers once, or is it like big corporations that just buy up this land and then rent it out to the farmer? Do you know?
Well, I mean, a good instance of this, or something I would know, is, you know, for instance, you'll have a family, and maybe they've made all of their money in oil out in West Texas. They've got money, you know, out of the oil business. So they need a tax write-off. So they buy a big ranch or a big farm or a combination. It's usually a combination of both, you know, as basically kind of a tax write-off. So they own all of these acres as a tax write-off, you know, but they need it to kind of come out somewhere in the middle. So they'll lease out part of it, for instance. You know, as far as the family-owned one, sometimes, yes, the people farmed it two generations ago. You know, granddad farmed this land, but granddad's long dead, and the kids or grandkids now, they got no interest in that. They might have tried it once and is like, you know, they know all of the years granddad farmed, and out of 10 years, he turned a profit 3 years. The rest of the time, he was taking out loans, trying to make it all come together and stay afloat. And they're like, they don't want to mess with that. You know, so they don't farm. So they can lease it out. They get a guaranteed check every year, and they don't have to worry about if it's going to actually turn a profit or not.
You know, I'm thinking they're probably trying to do the same thing over here. I mean, the big issue with British farmers is when the Labour government said that they were going to start taxing the farm when it was handed down to the son. I think it was if the farmland is worth over £1 million pounds or something, there's going to be a huge amount of tax on it every time it gets handed down. So in order to pay that, they're going to have to sell off the farmland. And I think then you're going to end up with the same situation with the corporation owning the farm and renting it out to the former farmer who used to live there. So
exactly.
Is there something similar like that that goes on over there then as well with taxing of the land when it gets sold off or died? Right.
The inheritance tax. That's exactly it. And that's how you wind up, like you say, with the corporations taking over. Because guess who's going to probably get these programs? The corporations. One of the biggest, back, say, in the 1800s, there were several huge ranches that owned just massive swaths of the state here in Texas, cattle ranches. And one of the last remaining ones was the Four Sixes Ranch. And, that's what happened to it a couple years back. The owner passed, and the inheritance tax on the property was going to be so much that the descendants who would inherit it, they couldn't afford the tax, so they're forced to sell the ranch, you know. And usually what happens, it gets broken up, depending on where it's located. These places get broken up. Like, you know, where I'm at, we're within like a 30-minute drive from Fort Worth, Dallas. So you will have places that have been farmed for generations, you know. Well, the last generation to farm it dies. The kids inherit it. The kids live somewhere else. They have no interest in farming. And so they sell it to a developer. And you have all this farmland, and it gets bulldozed around, and they build houses on it. And that's where it goes, and the farmland is gone. But, yeah, no, a lot of that is for sure. It's the same situation here. The inheritance taxes here, you know, on the property is so high that even if the descendants want to keep it and would like to keep farming or ranching on it, they just literally can't afford to do it. They can't, the taxes are just, you know, they can't raise that much capital. And so they're forced to sell it. And that's, again, how on big mega farms, a lot of times in this country, they're owned by Monsanto because they're a corporation and they're not subject to that. It's part of the corporate asset portfolio.
Well, you can see why farmers have such a high suicide rate, can't you? In America there, it's even higher than in Britain. I knew it was high in Britain. It's twice as high as for anybody else in Britain. But in America, it's three times as high. Farmers are three times higher than anybody else, three times more likely to commit suicide. And you can see why that is with these sort of programs against them. And then you come to this news story and you find out that black farmers are entitled to get all of this help, or female farmers are entitled to get all of this help, that if you're a white man farming, you're not going to get any of this help. So, I mean, this is like a sort of double whammy against them. It's going to end up making them even more depressed. So this is good news for them, even though they haven't been compensated. Getting back to the article here, last June, Will filed a lawsuit that challenged the USDA's use of race and sex as eligibility criteria for many programs, including the Loan Guarantee Program, the Dairy Margin Coverage Fee, and the EQIP Grant Program. The group believed that the policies violated the equal protection guarantees of the US Constitution. So that gives you an idea of the sort of things they were. If you're black, you could get a guarantee for your loan, for instance, which you wouldn't get if you were white. You could get a grant. You could just get handed money without having to pay it back if you were black. You couldn't get it if you were white. A Will represented Adam Faust, a dairy farmer from Chilton, Wisconsin. Will stated that Faust is one of the 2 million white male American farmers, 60% of all farmers, who were harmed by the discriminatory policies implemented by the Biden administration. In 2021, Faust became the first farmer to sue the Biden administration for race discrimination in the $4 billion Farmer Loan Forgiveness Program. He helped secure a nationwide temporary restraining order preventing discrimination by the USDA. So they were prevented from doing any more of this. And now this is the result of the investigation. I mean, that's a lot of money that was there for a loan forgiveness program. So quite clearly, if you were black and you couldn't afford to pay your loan, then the government would just not ask you for it back. They would just forgive you for that. Whereas if you were white, then the debt collectors are going to come after you. I mean, this is really quite serious discrimination. This is a lot worse than not allowing black people to sit at the front of the bus, or not allowing black people to share the water fountain. This is not allowing white people to have any help with loans, not allowed white people to have any grants, and just general help from the government. I mean, this is quite blatant discrimination that they do under this guise of, well, we're trying to make up for past discrimination. You can't make up for past discrimination by discriminating in another group today. You don't want any discrimination. You just want everybody to be treated equally. Grandpa, what are your thoughts on this?
More than discrimination, I would also point to corruption. If you think black farmers were getting this $4 billion, I laugh at that. Again, everything in this economy, especially when you get into government program, everything is some sort of money scam. $4 billion. And I can guarantee you, you would struggle to find anybody. They just say that. They say, oh, we've allocated $4 billion to help out black farmers. And if you went and gathered up all the black farmers that you could find and say, how many of you have seen any of this money? You would probably be lucky to find two. This is how these things work. They throw out a massive amount of money and nobody knows where it goes. And they say it's for black farmers. They're not. I've seen it too much. I know the corruption is so endemic here in this system. The money is being lined. I guarantee you Monsanto got some of this. You know, they'll say, oh, well, you know, they put it in somebody's name and they do all sorts of legal tricks. They probably got some of this. Various politicians, it cycles back around to them. Lawyers get paid, even as we see in this story. I can assure you the number of black farmers that actually saw anything from this $4 billion is probably breathtakingly slow. We'll notice in the article, they don't tell us how much any of them actually got. They just say how much money was allocated to the programs. So it's corruption. And these stories are throwing scraps. And as I said this earlier on, I said I'd circle back to it. I want to circle back and give a really good example. You read this, and it's in Breitbart, so you know who the target audience is. And you're supposed to look at this and go, well, you know, Trump is still, at least he's doing some stuff, you know, to help people. In this case, the farmers, the white farmers, he's helping the white farmers out. He's doing away with this crazy woke Biden stuff. In March of this year, just urea fertilizer was $640 a ton, which is still a lot. I mean, that's a lot. I remember talking with farmers, say, 5 years ago, and they were talking about $600 a ton fertilizer, and, you know, it's just too expensive to justify using it. But March of this year is $640 a ton for urea. Currently, it's $873 a ton. I looked right before the story, and this is just a market. It's going to vary where you're at. But just the overall market price, I looked right before we went on air here, it's $873 a ton in 3 months. That big of a change. Because why? Well, because like 30%+ of the world's urea comes through the Strait of Hormuz from the Persian Gulf. So Trump's war for Israel against Iran means that now farmers can't afford, you know, they've got to decide whether or not they can afford to fertilize their crops. And if they can't fertilize their crops, now what? They're tied into a lease and they're paying the lease payment regardless. And if they can't fertilize the crops, then the chances of them having enough yield to even break even is slim to none. You wind up with a situation where they've got to hope the crop fails. And what I mean by that is if they have crop insurance, they're probably going to come out better if the crop just doesn't come up. If they have a plague of locusts come in and wipe out the crop, because at least then they can file it on the insurance and get their money back and break even. But now that this has been sprung on them and they can't afford to fertilize, if the crops come up but do poorly, they're stuck. They're gonna lose money. So see, I can 100% guarantee you go grab any farmer and say, hey, you know, what's the foremost thing in your mind right now? You know, this story we're having today, and I'm not trying to piss all over the story, but this story, hey, the government's going to end this discrimination, or the cost of fertilizer. And I can guarantee you probably 10 out of 10 are going to start on a tirade about how they can't afford fertilizer. You've got to have it. You know, to sustain the level of farming, to sustain the level of food production that is required, that our society requires, you've got to have that fertilizer. And $873 a ton, and again, that's just general market. That doesn't mean that's what they're actually going to pay. I suspect it's going to be a lot higher if you're a farmer and you actually go down and pay to get a load of fertilizer. You know, because again, fertilizer, if you order fertilizer, it's going to come on a semi truck. So when you say $873 a ton, you say, oh, well, that's $800. How bad can, you know, just any amount at all, you're going to get at least a semi truck load. So you can figure how much tonnage that is. And you've got to spread it out over all these acres. It's a lot of money. And farmers just aren't going to be able to afford to do it. So they're not going to have the crop yields. They're already tied up and obligated on these leases. They're already obligated because they've taken out loans on their equipment, loans trying to stay afloat. Government offers them a loan and they still have to pay that back and they go broke. So, you know, this comes off, you read it, the average reader of Breitbart is going to read this and that knows nothing about farming is going to go, see, well, at least Trump is helping, the Trump administration is helping out the farmers. Yeah, more than likely, if you bring that up to a farmer, you're going to get a lecture on fertilizer prices.
Well, that, I mean, that's going to affect both the black farmers and the white farmers. They're both going to have to face this increase in price. And I'm looking at the articles around this, there was an article, The Guardian, a left-leaning newspaper, and that was saying about how this help for black farmers was going to be cut off, and that was discriminating against these farmers. How are we going to get by without our loan relief? And, well, that's the way the white farmers have to get by. And this idea that there was a discrimination, I don't really know where it comes from. They just seem to take it as a given. Black farmers were discriminated against. But I can recall reading a book, and I think it was a book about lynching. We used to have it on the website. I don't know if we still have it. And it was the truth about lynching in the United States. And it had lots of tables in it. And one of these tables was showing you just how many farms and how much farmland and how many farm animals the freed slaves were given. Because these slave owners, they cared about their slaves. Like, what are they going to do? How are they going to provide food for themselves if they're freed? They're no longer able to work on the farm. So a lot of these farmers actually gave them farmland, gave them animals, gave them farm equipment. And there was a table of how many millions of dollars worth of farms and farm equipment that they actually had. And within 10 years, all of that farmland and all of that farm equipment was just rotten. And had gone to weed because they didn't have the ability to actually do the farming. So it's not that the black farmers were discriminated against. They didn't have the ability to do these things for themselves. I think that's more likely the problem, because the white man really did go to some great lengths to try and help them out by giving them the equipment that they needed. And this is, I think it's called the Truth About Lynching in the South or something like that. I'll have a look for it anyway to put with the podcast notes when I do them up. Getting back to the article here. Since 2021, Will has represented dozens of individuals from 26 states to challenge race-based programs. It has sued the Biden administration 12 times and secured victories against programs such as the Farmer Loan Forgiveness Program, Restaurant Revitalization Fund, Minority Business Development Agency, Disadvantaged Business Enterprise Program, and McNair Scholarship Program. Will represents clients pro bono and covers 100% of the cost of litigations. I mean, there's loads of these programs there. And you could just get, if you're a black person and you owned a restaurant, you could get the government to just pay for the restaurant to be updated. If you're a black person and you needed a business loan, that would just get paid for you. And you probably wouldn't have to pay it back either. The Trump administration argued in February 2025 that the Biden-era USDA Farmer Loan Forgiveness Program violated the Constitution as it discriminates against white farmers. Breitbart News reported about this program in 2025. The program pays up to 120% of outstanding qualified debt to socially disadvantaged farmers. It defined those who could benefit from the program as those who belonged to a group whose members have been subjected to racial or ethnic prejudice because of their identity as members of a group without regard to their individual qualities. And that's exactly what was going on against these white farmers. They were being subjected to discrimination on the basis of their race. They were not being given this debt relief. The Biden US Department of Agriculture in May 2021 described the program as committing to equity across the department by removing systemic barriers and building a workforce more representative of America. And the USDA has defined the group as Black, African American, American Indian, Alaskan Native, Hispanic, Latino, Asian or Pacific Islander, but not white. So if you were a member of any of those ethnic groups, you would get this help. If you were white, you would not get any help. Grandpa, what are your thoughts on all of these programs?
Again, this money, you'll never see a detailed report of who's actually getting this money. You were talking about, you know, they point to these historical things. But the thing is, they're not going to go back in time. And even if you believe those people were treated wrongly back then, they're dead now. So who are you compensating? And again, these are money scams. I would love to see a situation where you could gather up black farmers and find out how many of them actually saw any of this money. Cause I can guarantee you it's an infinitesimal amount, because this is how these programs work. They'll announce, we've got all these programs. And then you go to the people, if you go to the people and talk to them that supposedly are supposed to be the beneficiaries of these programs, you find out that they never see a dollar of it. Even if they apply for it, they get some letter saying, oh, well, we can't really do it at this time. This is hilarious to me too, because again, a lot of this stuff, it preys on people's ignorance. If you go down to the coffee shop down here, go down for breakfast or lunch at the cafe and sit at a table of farmers, black, white, Hispanic, whatever. They're all pitching about the same thing. Right now, today, it's probably the cost of fertilizer. It's probably they all are complaining about the exact same stuff. This is probably the least discriminatory group you could sit with, farmers and ranchers. The black farmers, the black ranchers are going to be complaining about the exact same stuff as to why they're all belly aching to each other about the same, because they all have the same problems. And these government programs, there's all billions of dollars have been allocated, and you sit there and listen to them, none of them are getting any of it. Or if they do, it's laughable. You know, oh yeah, I applied for that program and I had to fill out, 15 pages of paperwork, but I got approved. And oh really, how much did you get? $1,500. Nothing. It's like I went through all of that and got $1,500, which isn't enough to, pay the fuel bill to plow one field. But nobody ever knows. Nobody ever knows where the money goes. It just gets allocated. When people look at, they hear these stories about, the Pentagon, as an example. And, the Pentagon, my gosh, the Department of Defense paid $500 for a toilet seat. It's always one of my favorite examples. They paid $500 a piece for toilet seats. And I always laugh. It's like, no, they didn't. They just had to put an accounting entry that the money went somewhere. So they claim they paid $500 for toilet seats. And people hear those and get outraged, but they don't understand that that's how the entire government works. $4 billion for minority farmers. No. They just claim that's where it went. It's like these private, quote unquote, private charities, and you just, this charity raised $5 million. To help poor starving kids. And then when you look into it, it's like, well, how much did the poor starving kids get? $4,000. The executives went on vacation, bought new cars, a nice fancy office building. It's how the government works. It's fine. Look, these programs, of course, are unconstitutional. But that's just the excuse. My point is, black farmers weren't getting this. If you think black farmers were getting $4 billion, I just laugh at that. They're not. They weren't. It's just another money scam. And all they're going to, at the end of the day, all they're going to do is invent a new program to claim there's $4 billion going into. And the same exact people who got this last $4 billion will get it. And it isn't going to be a farmer. White, black, it don't matter. They're at the bottom of the barrel. Some corporate outfit, the politicians, they all divvy the money around. And the people they claim it's targeted for, they're not going to see a dime. Or if they do, that's all they'll see is basically relatively a dime out of billions of dollars.
Do you get many black farmers over there? I mean, over here in Britain, we really don't seem to have very many of them. In fact, we have so few black farmers that there is a person who calls himself the black farmer. And he has a business called The Black Farmer. And he has a pig farm. And he sells pork products, basically. And he goes on the television. He's right wing. He's conservative. He's a mixed race guy. And he's literally referred to as The Black Farmer, which sort of implies that there really aren't that many black farmers. I mean, do you get many black farmers over there, Grandpa? Have you ever met one?
Yeah, I mean, they are. I mean, they're in a minority, obviously, because here's the thing. Farming and ranching, and I kind of lump those two together, it takes a certain mindset to enjoy or undertake that work. And so that's why I was saying, if you sit at a table of farmers, regardless of race, you're going to have the same conversations because it's a certain mindset. It's one of the, like I said, I think it's the number two. It's way above police as far as dangerous work. It's dangerous work because you're working on equipment. The equipment breaks down. A farmer can't afford to hire somebody to come out and fix it. They're out there crawling around in the dirt and the heat, getting stung by ants, working, with hot oil running on. There's not a lot of people want to sign up for that. You're taking a gamble. That you're even going to break even, much less turn a profit. So it's a certain mindset. And if you have that mindset, regardless of if you're black or not, you're going to share the same problems and the same, more or less the same viewpoint as anybody else that has that same mindset to want to do that sort of work. You see, just, you got to have a certain mindset to undertake. So yeah, no, they're in a minority, but yeah, no, they exist. They're out there. And like I say, they sit at the coffee shop with the white farmers and they all have the exact same complaints and the government doesn't address them.
What's the difference between a ranch and a farm then? Because I always thought ranch was just the American word for farm, or maybe it was a larger farm, but you're using them as two distinct entities there. So what's the difference between the two?
Well, farming is primarily focused on raising crops, you know, planting corn, wheat, oats, soybeans, whatever, you know, a crop. Ranching is cattle. Or, you know, sheep to a lesser extent. But here in Texas, if you say that guy's a rancher, you assume he's running cattle. Now, there could be overlap, because if you have a large ranch with significant amount of cattle, a lot of times what they will do is they will have a certain amount of acreage that they will plant, say, in the fall. They will plant wheat or oats there, primarily usually wheat. They'll plant wheat. But it's not to harvest. It's so the wheat will come up in the winter and they can graze the cattle. It's just for grazing the cattle. But ranching is animal husbandry, you know, raising, you know, you're a cattle rancher. If you're a farmer, you're growing crops. And that's the difference.
Yeah, that's strange. Over here, we'll say, oh, is a dairy farmer or a sheep farmer. Or a farm, and it could be arable farming, or it could be livestock farming. If you're a farmer, you could be growing crops, or you could be rearing animals. It's all seen as the same thing over here, and that's we don't differentiate between the two, ranches and farms.
Well, and it's funny because here we do use the term dairy farmer. It doesn't really make any sense because they're not, you know, planting dairy cows. And I'll tell you another funny thing. Yeah, because we do have dairies here in Texas. And 99% of dairies in Texas are owned by a Dutchman. If you just drive and find a random dairy in Texas and drive in there and go find the owner of it, I can virtually guarantee you it's going to be a Dutchman. I don't know what it is about Dutchman and being a dairy farmer. But yeah, no, we use that term too. It doesn't really make any sense, and it probably carries over because they're all Dutchmen, so they use that terminology. But yeah, we use that term in here too, dairy farmer, but it's not really correct. Generally speaking, if you say that guy's a farmer, you assume he's raising crops. If that guy's a rancher, then he's got however many hundred acres or whatever it is, and he's running cattle on it, which is focused on, you know, the cattle have calves, the calves get bigger, and you take the calves to market and sell them and hope to make a profit.
Yeah, and over here we have fields, small fields, I guess they are, and they're enclosures, and there's dry stone walling around them, there's fences, hedging around them, but they're all fairly small, and we have areas of land, which is, I guess it's called common land, basically, and that's open, and you have cattle, sheep, ponies on there, there's a cattle grid to get onto it. And I guess once a year, the farmers will go there and they'll try to round up their sheep, or they'll shear them, or they'll get their cattle. And that's sort of like hillside farming. It's a different type of farming to the small fields. So, and what I've heard over there in America, it's massive fields. But is it more like this sort of common land grazing? I mean, do they just let the cattle out for the beginning of the summer and then come back to get the calves, or how does it work? Is it so much bigger? Because I mean, over here, as I say, we have these small fields with sheep in and cattle in, but I'm sure over in America they have like massive expanses of land, and we also have sheepdogs. I mean, when I was looking up an image to go with this podcast, and it showed you a farmer with his tractor. And he had this little dog there, and it wasn't a sheepdog. Not like I'm used to seeing a sheepdog is a collie dog. But I guess you don't really have that much sheep over there either. I mean, do you have lamb farming over there? Or is it all just cattle and pig farming?
Well, it's mostly cattle. Sheep to a lesser extent. pigs are a whole different thing because they're not turning pigs loose free range. Although we have a lot of free range hogs. This is one of the main problems that ranchers and farmers have in Texas is feral hogs, which are just, you know, started as hogs that got out and they have no natural predators. And these hogs destroy fields, kill your livestock. They're terrible. Now, it is bigger here, obviously. And you have fields. If you say a field here, that indicates that it's plowed up and something is planted there. If it's for grazing livestock, it's a pasture. So if somebody says, you know, I've got 200 acres of pasture out there, you can automatically infer he's grazing animals on it. If he says, I have a 200-acre field, it's probably raising crops on, although we do use the terms interchangeably. Like somebody will say, I had to stop at the convenience store and get a Coke. Well, they may not actually literally bought a Coke. He may have bought a Mountain Dew or something. It's kind of a generic term. But normally, a pasture, you're grazing animal, fields, you're planting crops. If you're running, like, say, cattle, you're going to have hundreds of acres. You know, large ranches have thousands of acres because your goal, if you're running cows, is you want to feed them as less as possible out of pocket. So you want them to graze the natural grass because you're not having to pay for that. If you once your winter gets here and you have to start feeding them, that's money coming out of your pocket every time you have to go out there and roll out a round bale or put out cubes. So you're going to have a lot of land because an acre, 100 acres of land, depending on how fertile it is, how much rain you get, it's going to determine you can only run so many cows on that and sustain them. And it's a lot fewer than you think. And this brings you to the next point, something I just touched on, farming or ranching. You're at the mercy of so many things. You know, the weather, is it going to rain? You know, if it you can plant a crop or figure on, well, I've got this many acres and it should support this many mama cows. So you buy that many mother cows, turn them out, and then it just doesn't rain. And in a month or so, there's nothing for them to eat. So you have to take them back to the cattle sale and run them through. Only the problem is everyone else is doing the same thing and they bring half of what you gave for them and you lose money. Same thing with farmers. You plant this many acres and you're thinking, okay, if I can produce this much this much wheat, this many tons of wheat this year, I can come out. Only it doesn't rain, or the grasshoppers are bad this year, or there's a certain worm in there that got in and ate the wheat before it ever sprouted up and nothing comes up. There's so many things working. That's why I said a while ago, it takes a certain mindset to be able to want to do that. You know, and so people are going to share that mindset. They're willing to gamble like that because it is. It's a gamble. There's so many variables that can work against you. Weather, bugs, you know, the various insects. It's a tough way to make a living. It's always been a tough way to make a living. We do have technology now that helps, but you're still at the end of the day, you're gambling. Is it going to rain? Are you going to have some kind of infestation come in and wipe your crop out? And it's tough, whether you're doing cattle ranching or various forms of farming. And that's why it's so hard at the end of the day. There's so many things working against you. So many things have got to go right for you to turn, you know, for you to turn a profit. And it takes a certain mindset to want to do that.
Well, just something you mentioned earlier about insurance, that they would get insurance for these crops. I mean, I'd never have thought of that before. So, I mean, is it expensive for farmers to insure their field? And that means that they're guaranteed to get the money if it fails?
Well, what crop insurance does, what crop insurance does, and again, it adds another, it's not that it's super expensive, but it adds another layer of expense. And if you do collect, if the crop fails and you do collect, basically all you're going to get is the cost of the seed you planted. I mean, you might get a little more, which once you figure in your diesel fuel, running your tractor to plant it, at best on the crop insurance, all you're going to do is break even. You're not going to make a profit. So now you've invested 6 months into a crop. It's failed. Another couple months to get the insurance company to pay you out. And at the end of the day, you've wasted 6 to 8 months because, okay, they gave you your money back you put into the field, but you haven't made any money. You went 8 months and you haven't made any money. How long are you going to make? How long are you going to live like that? You can see why it's such a difficult thing. Yeah, I mean, yeah, they do have crop insurance. And like I say, on the surface, it's like, well, it seems reasonable. But you're already paying for now fertilizer, which you can't afford. So are you even going to fertilize? How much are they going to cover if you're not fertilizing? You know, did you run the crop in with a grain drill or did you scratch it in? And there's different things and how the insurance pays out. But at the end of the day, even if it pays out, it's just your seed money back. You know, if there's any more, it might help cover the diesel fuel cost for planting. You're not making a profit and you went 6-8 months and didn't make any money. How long are you going to stay in business like that?
Well, you aren't, are you? So you can't actually insure the profit that you get at the end of it. You're just going to get the seed money back. That's not too
basically,
clever, is it?
That's it. Yeah. Well, I mean, it beats losing that too. That's why most, they will take that insurance out because, I mean, it's better than losing that as well.
Well, how do they deal with these hogs then? I mean, what do they do? Do they trap them? And what sort of damage do they cause? Do they go after the small cattle? Stuff like
yes.
that?
Yes. Right. Yes to all of what you just said. I've done a little farming and been exposed to farming and ranching, you know, basically my whole life off and on. It's unimaginable how destructive hogs are. The feral hog problem in Texas is and Oklahoma, we're not just Texas, Oklahoma. It's hard to explain how destructive they are. They're a tank. They have no natural enemies and they reproduce. They can have multiple litters a year and there's nothing that kills them except people. They will, if a hog wants to go from one field to another field and there's a fence there, they just bulldoze through it. They put their nose under it and pull the wires. They're big. They're heavy. They just push a wire. They'll get out into a field and root it up. And I don't mean like, you know, an armadillo rooting up. I mean, they make moon craters. I've driven a tractor before and drove off unknowingly into one of these spots where hogs have rooted up. And I thought I was going to flip the tractor over. They'd be like moon craters. They destroy fields. People trap them. There's so many of them. Some of the bigger ranches, they'll get a kick out of this. You can look it up. There are people that have helicopters, and this is what they do. Ranches hire them to hunt hogs from the helicopter, and they'll fly in over the treetops in these little helicopters, and a guy is hanging out the door of the helicopter with a rifle. And what they'll do is they fly over the treetops and the brush, and those hogs will start running. And what they do is they'll try to run those hogs up into the corner of a fence, and then the guy just shoots them out the window. I talked to a guy one time that had done that. I was out on a place, and I look out, and I see a black helicopter with a guy hanging out the door with a rifle, and I'm like, oh, shit, they found me. But no, they were hunting hogs. And I talked to him later, and I'm like, well, you know, I knew the place had a hog problem. And I asked the helicopter, I'm like, well, how many did you get? And he goes, we didn't really get that many. We only got 500. 500. And that's not that many. And 2 days later, I was back out on that place and the hogs were running around out there. You could see them running around out there like nothing. They'd hit 500 hogs and it didn't even make a dent in them. So that tells you how bad the feral hog problem is. And they get huge. They get massive. They just cause massive destruction. Yes, if you're running sheep or you have a new calf born, if the hogs get, and hogs kill people, Sven. There was a case not here, but it was elsewhere in the state of Texas. It's been several years ago. And there was a nurse, and she was going to visit some old person, you know, doing like home health. And she drove up to this guy's place. And the old man or old woman, whoever it was she was going to see, she never came in. And the old person's looking out. It's like, where is she? And long story short, she got out of her car and was attacked by wild hogs, and they killed her. I mean, they're fractious. They're mean. They'll get after you. Most of the time, if you run into them, they run off. But if for whatever reason they decide to get aggressive, they can kill you very quickly. You know, an 800-pound, 500-pound hog comes at you. There's nothing you can do. If you're armed, you can shoot it, but they will kill you. They have killed people. They will kill calves that are newly born. They're a bane to the farmer and rancher's existence here.
And what were they originally then? Were they domestic pigs that were being used for pork?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. I and guess they got out.
I guess you can't eat them now then. Now they're wild. Because you hear wild boar in restaurants.
You wouldn't. I mean, you can. Yeah, no, you can eat them. I mean, you're not going to want some big nasty boar because it's going to be gross. But no, you can eat them. You know, most people don't because there's just damn many. The farmers and ranchers are just wanting to wipe out as many as they can because they're so destructive. But yeah, no, you could technically eat them, but you can go out on a hog hunt and hunt all day and you're not even going to. But yeah, they started off primarily as domestic hogs. Now, if you go down to South Texas, they have actual kind of more native wild hogs. They're called javelinas, and they're smaller than a normal hog and they're meaner. They're extremely aggressive. They are very mean. But no, most of the time when you hear people in Texas or Oklahoma, like I say, it's not an exclusive to Texas thing, talk about wild hogs. They originally are various domestic hogs that got out. And once they're out, they can reproduce. I don't remember. It's like every 6 or 8 weeks they can have a new litter. And there's nothing in the natural, because they're not native, you know, there's nothing that naturally hunts them or preys on them. So they just reproduce like crazy and take everything over.
Well, I guess you don't know what they've eaten either. So, I mean, that's why you wouldn't eat them. I mean, pigeon, we have like wood pigeon. Pigeon tastes lovely, but pigeons nowadays eat all this rubbish and this dirty stuff. So you really wouldn't want to eat a wild pigeon. And I guess it's the same with wild boar because you have no idea what it is that they've eaten. Well, I guess my final question to you would have to be about cowboys. Do they still have cowboys on horses rounding up with the cattle? I mean, do they have massive herds of cattle that need to be rounded up?
Well, to your second question, yes. To your first question, mostly in the movies. No, they don't really. Nobody really does cattle. I mean, they do still use some horses sometimes. What will normally happen if you're gathering cattle, because periodically through the winter, you got to go feed cows. I mean, it doesn't matter. The grass dries up. You got to go feed them. And you'll put out big bales of hay, or you usually give them also what you call cake or cubes. Most people say cubes. And you have these big feeder boxes. There's a point to the story. Bear with me. These big feeder boxes on your truck, or it's in a trailer, and you go out and you feed these cubes to the cattle. So you'll go out there and honk your horn, or people put sirens on their trucks in their pickups, and you'll drive out there and set the siren off, or they'll just honk the horn, and you put the cubes out. Well, the cows know, they understand that when they hear that sound, they all run up there to eat the cow cubes. So when it's time to gather the cows, that's what they do. They go out there, they set the horn off, and the cows will just follow the pickup up there, and they go in a big enclosure, you know, a bigger pen, and they just follow the pickup in. So you watch when it's time to gather cows, and you're out on one of these places, and there's a pickup with their cake feeder on the flatbed, and this massive amount of cows just following them. You know, they just follow the pickup because they're waiting for those cubes, and they follow. Or you will just feed them. You'll put the hay out in, say, if you have a, say, 4 acre little spot there, you'll leave the gates open, and you always feed them in that 4 acre spot. And so when it's feeding time, when it's time to gather cows, you just feed them and close the gates, and they're gathered up. There you go. Now, usually on a big ranch, after you've gathered, say, 90% of the cows because they follow the pickup or the four-wheeler, you're just out there on an ATV, they follow you around on the four-wheeler, you'll have a couple of guys go out on horseback to get the stragglers that stayed out in the brush and the non-cooperative ones and gather them up that way. But no, as far as what you've seen in TV and, you know, you got, you know, 50 cowboys out there going yeehaw, yeehaw, and driving the cattle. No, that doesn't happen anymore.
Pity. It does sound a lot easier, actually, just by having a bag full of cow cake there, cow nuts. He's calling cow nuts here. There's sacks full of this stuff that they used to feed the cows. Thankfully, where I get my meat from now, it's all grass-fed. It's very, very good. I recommend grass-fed meat. I recommend people go to their local farm shop to get your meat from, make friends with them, and you'll always know that you're going to get good quality meat on your plate rather than going to a supermarket. Don't ever go to a supermarket. So that's good news. Basically, the white farmers are no longer going to be discriminated against. And I did also find that there even more South African farmers are now being accepted into America as refugees. I think they are now the only refugees that are being accepted into America are white South African farmers, and they're making plans for thousands more to come over soon as well. So it's nice to have a little bit of positive news for white farmers for once. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Grandpa. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.